This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. Discover Lafayette is recorded in the offices of Raider Solutions, a technology company located in the Light Center in Lafayette, Louisiana. Raider offers a complete fleet of IT solutions for businesses of all sizes. Raider's motto is, you just want it to work, we understand. If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. Today's guest is Representative Julie Stokes, Republican state legislator from Kenner and candidate for Louisiana Secretary of State. A certified public accountant, Julie was the first in her family to graduate from college, having attended UNO on a scholarship. Elected in 2013 to represent District 79 in the Louisiana House of Representatives, she jumped right in and assumed various leadership positions at the state and national level. Julie serves on the executive committee of the National Conference of State Legislators and is on a first-name basis with analysts at the Tax Foundation, the nation's leading independent tax policy research center. She chairs the Sales Tax Streamlining and Modernization Commission, which seeks to reform Louisiana's sales tax system. Julie was recognized nationally as one of a handful of state tax legislators of the year by State Tax Notes for her work on sales tax reform. She's the vice chair of the Legislative Audit Advisory Committee and serves on the Joint Legislative Committee on the Budget. She also serves on the House Executive Committee, Ways and Means, Health and Welfare, and Joint Legislative Committee on Capital Outlay. She's been recognized as one of the most knowledgeable Louisiana legislators in the field of Louisiana's fiscal environment. Julie withdrew her candidacy from last year's state treasurer's race, where she was thought to be the front runner after she was diagnosed with breast cancer. In January 2018, after aggressive treatment, Julie was able to announce that she was cancer-free. But mainly, Julie, you're a person of integrity. I'm so excited to have you here today, to have you as my friend and serving our state. And I'm glad you're here in Lafayette. We're going to tie in the Discover Lafayette in a second, but I was glad you had this opportunity to drop in and visit with us. So welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure to be here. Yeah. An honor. Thank you.
Well, we met through our mutual friend, Larry Murray. We met at the Washington, D.C. function when I was running for state rep here in Lafayette. And from the time we met, you supported me both emotionally. You gave me advice about raising money. You sent campaign funds for me to use. And I learned from you that, you know, politics is about persevering. And so I wanted to let you tell your story today while you're here in town. Maybe we can start with your story as a young girl, a young woman, and putting yourself through college and how you got to this point.
Thanks, Jan. I really appreciate that. That was a very nice intro, and I appreciate it. I grew up in a blue-collar house. I mean, my dad was an operating engineer, and my mom was a stay-at-home mom. I went to public school my whole life, public college at UNO. The only reason I got to go to college is because I got a scholarship. And right in the middle of all of that in college, we had a horrible loss because my father died. And he 6 days before my father died, my grandfather had died.
Oh, Julie.
And basically what had happened with my dad is that he had a heart attack out on the water fishing. And it just took my uncle a long time to get him to the shore. And so he was in a coma for 2.5 months. So I know what it is to walk through something that difficult, even at that young age. He was 46, my mom was 43, I was 21, and I think that was pretty formative,
right?
You know, to go through that at that point. And then shortly thereafter that, you know, it was out of college, out of my comfort zone, and to public accounting. Mm-hmm. I worked at the Big Four now, but back then it was Big Six firms, and also Postlewaite and Netterville. And in between, I worked for Ochsner for a little while doing financial statements. And when you're in public accounting, they really want you to get involved in your community.
Right.
Because they want you out there doing sales.
Well, rainmaking, yeah.
Right, and making contacts. So I joined the Young Leadership Council in New Orleans and got really super involved with that. Ended up on the board and the executive committee and, you know, everything. I grew more and more interested in the community. That whole experience led me over to the Jefferson Chamber, where they were starting a young professionals group there. I became the second president of that. And that put me on the board of the chamber, which put me on the governmental committee, which, you know,
you meet everybody.
Basically,
right.
That's how it all really began. Somewhere after that process kind of started, we decided to have a family. And so I left my employment at outside companies, and I worked for myself for a while in the house. And I did bookkeeping and some, like, what we call an audit, call it a review and compilations and stuff like that, and some tax returns. And I did that through the birth of both of my kids and really enjoyed it until Hurricane Katrina came. And at that point in my life, I had been thinking about running for Kenner City Council. And I took a long look at my house that was flooded and my business that was flooded and my one-year-old and my three-year-old and said, you know, life's too short. And I quit everything for a little while, for a few years. So like from, I'd say, 2005 to 2009. And I did this tremendously deep dive, you know, on life and my...
Into yourself?
Yeah, into self, but into just life, you know?
Right.
My... You know, being a mom, you know, and just kind of my nature, I'm going to find a way to be a workaholic, stay-at-home mom.
Did you end up doing every volunteer committee?
I mean, I always had a Bible study at the house.
Yeah.
So I was always, me and my friend who lived across the
Bible.
Street.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We live across the street, and so she would teach the mother's group 1 week, and I would teach her the next week, and... You know, I tell you, I wouldn't trade those years for anything because I don't think I would have had the courage or the stamina to deal with any of the adversity I have now and have had without that time in my life. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, as all reflective times like that, they always come to an end. And
right.
I had my husband, which our company is Stokes & Associates, and it does vocational rehabilitation. And he's a great practitioner in that. I mean, he actually is like licensed 001. He started the licensing board his profession. And but he didn't want to run a company anymore. And I told him, well, you know, how about if I come back and I help you with that? So I started back at Stokes & Associates. And
your kids were in school.
The kids were in kindergarten and first grade and second grade, and I could do that. Because I can't sit around very much. It's just not in my nature. But as I was doing that, you know, I had even kind of, because it's a vocational firm, I had even kind of gotten into, I got some certifications and some of the like testing to help people find their purpose. And so I had that going on in this kind of coaching environment. And then I also had going on that I was getting more and more plugged in again to politics. I had been named a commissioner for the Regional Transit Authority in New Orleans and was serving on an economic development committee in Kenner. And one day I said to my assistant at Stokes & Associates, I said, Pam, I feel like right now I have two oars in the water and one of them is going to take off and I have no idea which one it is. And then I don't think it was maybe 10 days later that my predecessor, Tony Leegee, resigned from his position in the House and this position opened up.
In 2013.
It was the end of 2012. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we tossed it over as a family and we decided to go for it.
Husband's very supportive.
He's been great, you know, and the kids have been great, too. Because, you know, that's an evolution, you know, when you grow up with a mom in public service like that. But anyway, we made that move, and it's funny, but I know that that's a calling for me now. You know, however the path of my life will take me, I know that there's nothing that I think other than being a mother to your kids and, you know, and being a wife to your husband and ministering to the people in your life, I don't think there's anything as important to me as wanting this place that I was born in. I have so much family history here.
Yeah, this is your home.
Yeah, it's my home. And, you know, I want my kids, who are now 16 and 14, I want them to want to be a Louisianian.
Mm-hmm. And be proud of it.
I just want them to be proud of it. And I want opportunity to be here and, you know, the chance to find an amazing job and a career that you want to be in.
Yeah.
Right here at home. And, you know, we've just got so many challenges as a state. You know, we've got a vanishing coastline. We're subject to storms. I mean, you know, we've got a lot of heavy stuff to deal with. We've got a high poverty rate. There's just so much work to be done, and I feel absolutely called to that. And I think that without that deep dive, I wouldn't realize that what I'm feeling now is that peace that comes with purpose.
Right.
You know? Right. So
you won. You ran in 2013, and you beat other Republican opponents, huh? That went well for you, 56% of the vote. Which is really unheard of with that many people.
Well, I know. It was crazy. And honestly, the day of the election, you just feel like you just jumped out of the airplane.
Yeah.
You just jumped out of the airplane, and you're just waiting to see if your parachute's going to open, mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
And it did, and it was amazing, and it was a surprise. I was so glad that I didn't have to go to a runoff.
Right.
It was amazing, and I started serving in the House right away because that was a March election.
Okay.
Very first thing I ever heard, very first meeting I ever went to was a Ways and Means meeting, and it was when Bobby Jindal was rolling out that proposed tax reform package in 2013. That got me really interested in tax reform.
Mm-hmm.
A CPA.
Is that when they were looking at just having more, I guess, uniform taxing on services and everything?
Yeah. Uh-huh. So they were going to replace income tax with a lot more sales tax.
Right.
You know, and it would have been broadening the base, which is going out
attorneys
to some services.
And, yeah, accountants
yeah,
and everything.
Some of that was, mm-hmm. you know.
Lawnmower people. Yeah.
yeah. yeah. Lawn care, haircuts, yeah. I mean, you name it.
Right.
But also having to go up on the sales tax rate mm-hmm. pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of bottomed out and it failed for a variety of reasons, a lot of which were probably, it probably needed to fail, but it failed nonetheless. And it started just an interest in me about how do we structure mm-hmm. this system of taxes so that Louisiana is looked at as being competitive.
Right.
We're strategic in how we do it. We're telling the world that we're open for business. We're business friendly. I just think that we had an amazing opportunity mm-hmm. that needed to happen because, you know, we have, when you look at the Tax Foundation, you look at the maps, they'll have a Tax Freedom Day map, and you see that we actually have the first Tax Freedom Day in the United States.
Oh.
I know. For a little while there, I think in 2015, we were first. In 16, we were a little off from that. Mm-hmm. I think the worst we ever got was 6. Then now we're back to first again. But even though we have low taxes, our rates are all really high.
Yeah, and they're aggressive.
Yeah, and we have some odd deductions that, you know, like federal income tax, that only a few states really have mm-hmm. that. And so it causes our rates to look high and causes us to be ranked in the 40s. Whereas if we would make some moves to do some reform and get our rates down mm-hmm. commensurate with where we actually are, you know, we could be in the teens.
And you really, I mean, you were on so many of these committees I was looking at nationally and at the state level. And I think you might be one of the few people that really knows the ins and outs of our taxing system.
Yeah.
Because, it's confusing when you look at our roads, the state of our bridges and all, and you wonder, why don't we have money to pay for things? But yet, every state's got a different tax system.
Right.
And I mean, you've really spent the time, I think, to show up prepared, Julie. Because, I mean, you can't just take one piece of the puzzle, right? You have to look at the whole puzzle.
That's right.
For it to work.
I think one of the biggest problems that we have in government right now is just, we're trying to solve things with sound bites mm-hmm. and rhetoric.
And people really don't trust anymore. I think that's what we hear locally anyway. I don't know what the sentiment is statewide as you travel, but people really want to make sure that their money's going for what they think it is, and
that's
they don't
right.
always feel that it is. So
and it's no wonder, because honestly, if you think about it, half of the people in this state are being told by half of our legislature that we've cut and we've cut to where we're in a dangerous place, mm-hmm. that we're putting our futures in jeopardy. And then the other half of the people hear from the other half of the legislators that there is no fiscal crisis and we just need to cut and cut and cut.
Right. So who and do you so, believe? You
know? Right. So, I mean, if I was just in the general public, I'd be infuriated too.
Yeah.
And we're just in such a weird environment, I think. And this is politics all around the globe right now, mm-hmm. to some extent. But this whole post-truth era, and I didn't even know that that was a thing. But
what is that?
It's the fact that we no longer try to lead from a place of facts and logic. Oh. We try to lead from enticing people's feelings and emotions.
So it depends on how you define truth.
Yeah. And that's just not right.
Right.
And
right.
I feel like, you know, for me, I feel like people elect you to have discernment, mm-hmm. to learn as much as you can learn and to have discernment over what the real right and wrong answers are. Mm-hmm. But we're just in a weird place, I think, with politics where the truth isn't the truth and objective analysis.
Yeah.
They're just kind of out of style right now.
And I want facts. I want to be able to read something and make up my own mind if I can just know what the facts are. And you are known for being honest and an elected leader with integrity. So.
Well, I appreciate it. And that honesty, it can be a huge advantage because I think people, when they hear me, they know that I'm speaking from the heart and mm-hmm. I'm not trying to pull any punches.
And you've done your research, you know, before you speak.
Yeah, so, all the time.
Yeah. So let's talk about why you're here. You were in town for, I guess, the Clerk of Court, their annual convention, which I know they like meeting here in Lafayette. And
yeah, everybody likes being here in Lafayette.
Well, good.
Y'all have the best food.
We do have the best food.
And lovely people, too.
Yeah.
Everybody's great.
Yeah. Well, I want to give a shout out to Debbie Hudnall. I know she's the executive director of the Clerk of Court Association, and I'm sure it's a busy time right now with this statewide election coming up for Secretary of State.
Yeah.
So you had intended to run last year for treasurer and for health reasons had to back out, but let's talk about where you are now in this race.
Well, right now, we qualified for this race on July 18th. I qualified on the 19th. Been running around the state and meeting people, talking to people. And when you're not running around the state, you're still talking to people because I'll have a call list of 60 mm-hmm. people.
Yeah, I know.
It's just crazy. But
and you still have your voice.
I do. And I appreciate this environment because we're getting to talk really soft. I know it's great because usually we're all trying to yell above each other. Mm-hmm. And so this is really nice. but, you know, coming off of everything that I've been through, I mean, honestly, when in the treasurer's race, I felt that call. I mean, like, I felt so called to that. It was just so hard to understand.
Why? Yeah.
How can I get cancer in the middle of this? And, you know, breast cancer was never a thing that I thought would happen to me, honestly. I mean, I had all kind of other paranoias about my health, but that just was one that I had said, that will not happen to me. No family history, no anything. But it did. And I found out because of the kind I had, it was triple negative, and it was already at stage 2B, which means it was already in lymph nodes. And, you know, basically the doctors were giving me a 67% chance.
Oh, gosh.
So there was a 33 or a third chance that I wouldn't be here with us anymore. And actually, I know three women that got the exact same diagnosis on the same week that I did, and one of us is not here anymore.
Oh, my God, Julie.
So, I mean, it's such a thing, and there was no way to stay in that race. It just wasn't possible. Not when you have, at that time, they were 15 and 13. You have kids at home, and I'm an only child, too. I mean, my mother needs me.
Right.
I mean, it's, you know, just wasn't anything you could play with. So I went through all of it, the chemo, and I'll tell you, it's to appreciate how depressed, and I don't just mean like emotionally depressed, but your whole body just goes through so much with that.
And then it's
a big deal, you know. And there were just some wonderful women who I barely knew that had the same problem and that they had been cured that reached out to me kind of in the darkness, you know. And I just talked to them all the time and they gave me so much support. And, you know, I really appreciate those women. And, I was really happy and at peace with it. And it was almost otherworldly. Like, you can't do that, you know. And
but
I really,
you were. You,
I
remember
was.
You handled it with grace. You said, you know, God has something else in mind for me.
Right. And that's what, you know, I told everybody, it's like, I really liked it when my name had an exclamation mark after it, because I knew what I was going to do. And now, at that time, I just felt like ellipses and a question mark. But the good news is that ellipses and a question mark is full of opportunity, and you never know where.
Right.
But I'm kind of a planner, so I like to know where.
Yeah. So this race opened up to fill the Secretary of State spot, which, again, we need somebody that's got integrity, that knows the state, wants to see our state, you know,
succeed.
Rise to the top and succeed.
Right.
So what is it like running? May I ask, like, what is a typical day like for you running for state office?
Well, I mean, like this morning, I started out in New Orleans at a Making Strides for Breast Cancer event. And so I have on my
pink,
very hot pink jacket.
Yeah, very hot pink. Yeah.
Very hot pink. And so I spoke there, and then we got in the car very quickly and got over here for lunch. Because we had exactly 2 hours to make it, and we actually made it, which was, I know.
No accidents. You were lucky.
I was lucky. And got there, and I think I was there for 2 minutes before it was my turn to speak. So, and then, you know, had lunch with some people, met some people, you know, in between, sat under a shady shady tree and with the air conditioner running, and made some phone calls and worked on the computer, and then came over here. But, you know, tomorrow I think I start speaking to the LCPA, a Society of CPAs, at 10 or something like that. And then I have to be, and that's downtown New Orleans and at the Ritz-Carlton. And then I have to be in Bossier City for a forum tomorrow night.
Bossier City?
Yes.
Man.
And then when the forum's over in Bossier City, we're driving down to Lake Charles because it's their, you know, legislator event.
Which is big. You can't miss that.
I know.
That's cool.
I know.
Yeah.
I love that event. And so we're going to be down there, sleep there, wake up there, go to the breakfast, and go to lunch.
So do you have any good CPA jokes? I mean, what makes that crowd laugh?
Well, it was... nobody else will get it. but it was great. I was giving a CPE. It was like 200 auditors from Postal Weight. And I was
kind of
giving
a dry
them a
group.
Oh my gosh. I was and that's what I have, 1,000 audit and accounting people tomorrow. Anyway, so I was talking to the Postal Weight Netherfield group, and just these things that you do in your work, like in work papers, you always write no further work, not considered necessary, and all these like little auditisms that you use in those work papers. And I said one of them by accident, and everybody laughed, and it was
there.
Just,
you go.
It was so hysterical. And I said, I love this crowd.
I know.
This is
my
crowd. I know. I you know, and I tend to be very data focused, you know, so I mean,
you
I
are,
do great with CPAs and also engineers. Love engineers. I mean, it's just, you know, I love numbers people.
Right.
I think we need that.
Yeah.
You know? And keeping track of votes is just another thing that we count.
Right.
Just
we were
like
talking
money.
About that before the tape started. I don't know that a lot of people understand exactly what the Secretary of State's office does. We think of elections, and which is super important, and especially with all the hacking worries, you know, the international hacking. But that office is also responsible for all of our corporate and business filings.
That's right.
You know, it's a very important office that really should be invisible to the general public.
Yeah.
But we do need to elect people that are qualified not only to serve, but to look at ways to improve operations.
Right.
And is that something, have you gotten to know the staff and see what they're doing?
Well, there's a lot of staff.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people. And there's...
I mean, they're over the museums also, right?
Well, about more than half of the museums are run by the Lieutenant Governor's office.
Okay.
But still, there are 11, I believe, that are run by the Secretary of State. And I'd like to see the Secretary of State's office and the Lieutenant Governor's office be able to work together on all the museums so that everybody would get kind of treated the same way. So that's something I've kind of started to mentally explore a little bit. But, you know, the Secretary of State is also the keeper of the archives.
Right.
So the museum called the archives houses all of our historic documents. That's another really important function. And I think that for me, the most opportunity probably lies within that corporate function. Mm-hmm. I think there could be a lot of fun with that. Yeah. In terms of economic development, being another spokesperson for the state.
I do too.
Making that process of registering your corporation is easy. And really not only just easy, but inviting. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people out there that try to do everything on their own. And wouldn't it be nice if they could go through and they do the incorporation, but then they're asked, are you going to have employees, route you to workforce commission? Yeah. Are you going to sell goods, route you to sales tax, mm-hmm. you know, getting filed for that in the respective parishes.
Like a one-stop shop.
Yeah. And like, yeah. You know, a lot of people forget, and this is the nerdy CPA, but they forget when you form an LLC that you have to tell the federal government how you want to be taxed. Mm-hmm. Remind people to do that.
Right.
And I think just, I'd like to see it be an office where you could almost be an assist mm-hmm. in economic development.
Right.
Just another voice out there pushing jobs in this state, because that's where the promise, that's where quality of life comes from, bringing jobs to this state and opportunity. The elections, I mean, is of crucial importance mm-hmm. right now more than ever, because we don't just have random, you know, teenagers or whatever trying to hack into systems, although one of them was successful last week
in
an experiment.
Yeah, 13, was it a 13-year-old just hacking into
maybe
a
11,
state?
13.
Yeah, maybe 11.
Anyway.
The younger, the smarter, it seems.
Right. You know? Anyway, yeah. So, you know, we're not just dealing with that. We're dealing with major governments, you know, mm-hmm. that are well-funded and
know what they're
and
doing.
Would like to see our government go down. And so there's never been a more important time to have a good cybersecurity, have a good system of internal controls set up from top to bottom. Mm-hmm. You know, we're fortunate to have an election system that runs from the state down. A lot of other states, you know, every county decides when they want to have an election, et cetera, and then that information comes up to the state level.
Right.
But
right.
for us, it's we push down the machines, you know, we do a lot in this state, and the machines really never touch the internet, which is good in terms of hacking, mm-hmm. for sure. So we already have a lot of advantages, but I don't think anybody's better equipped to handle internal controls and setting things up to be foolproof as well as a CPA is.
I agree. So hold that thought. I'd like to take a moment to thank one of our sponsors, LUS Fiber, recently ranked by Harvard University as number one in the nation for price savings. A trailblazer in community broadband services, LUS Fiber can serve your telephone, internet, and television needs. For more information, please visit lusfiber.com. So, Julie, you're a female candidate. I know you said, you told me privately, you don't look at yourself as a female elected leader, but in fact, that probably is how you're viewed by many. And I'd like to know if you have advice for up-and-coming women that are running for office, you know, besides the raising the money, some of the difficult things. Is there any advice you can share of what you've learned in your, you know, you've been in office now for, 5 years?
You know, and I think it's in all of life that a lot of times as women, as girls, we're not taught to advocate for ourselves. You know, we're kind of taught to be kind of in that service role, you know, of watching out for everybody else. And that's really important. And I mean, that's a very godly thing, not to diminish that whatsoever. But I think, you know, as women, to fight for what we believe in and fight for ourselves, because honestly, if you have deep held beliefs and conviction about something and you want to change the world, then you've got to advocate for yourself. Because the only way to get in a position where you can change the world is to do that.
You have to be at the table.
Yeah. And, you know, I never really gave much credence to, you know, all of the gender disparity problems. But I got to tell you, over the last 5.5 years, I've seen a different side of things. And I do believe that there could be some issues there and that we need to fight in terms of both corporately, as all women, take care of each other and advocate for each other. Mm-hmm. You know, and ironically, this particular office, this office isn't vacant of Secretary of State because we didn't have a good election system. It's not vacant because we didn't have, you know, a good corporate, you know, entryway. Mm-hmm. This office is vacant because there was sexual harassment in the workplace. And I've actually been able to and become pretty active in the legislature with being a voice for women. I've been a first responder of sorts when things have been said that might not have been very appropriate or very create a good work environment. And I can give everybody my word that as Secretary of State in that office, I want to bring wholeness to that office and a sense of everybody being cared for. I just think that that's really important. And I think that that's something that I am uniquely qualified to bring to the table.
How can people find out more about your campaign? What website should we go to?
So you can go online at www.votejuliestokes.com. And you'll see all the social media links. I'm on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and Instagram, I think. Mm-hmm. So we've got the full suite of social media, and we would just love to hear from you.
I was going to ask, people can reach out and contact you.
Yes, you can reach out and register to be a volunteer, register for a sign location, donate. Any number of things right there on that website, and I would just love to hear from you.
Good. Jason Sikora is here with us, and Jason, I know you've been listening and taking notes. Do you have any questions of Julie?
Yeah, I had four, but you just used two of them.
Uh-oh.
So I was going to ask advice, obviously, for anybody running, but I thought your answer was terrific. I was going to ask, well, if people can volunteer, how to do that. So you definitely do need volunteers, right, to help the campaign?
Yeah, for sure. So if you go on to that www.votejuliestokes.com, you'll find tabs for volunteering where you submit. You just type your name in and your contact information, and somebody will get back with you. And there's tabs, there's buttons for donating and buttons for signs and
Money.
Money. It's such a shame that our politics, you have to raise money for me, it's like I want to change the world. Well, to change the world, you have to raise money. Which is super awkward when you're told your whole childhood by your mom, never show up at anybody's house unannounced and never ask anybody for
that's
money.
That's exactly right. What you're doing every day.
And that's exactly the name of the game. But, it is very important.
Yeah. Well, that might play into my next question. And if a genie could grant you one wish to make your campaign easier, what would it be?
$1 million.
Okay, I had a feeling.
So if anybody has an extra million laying around, you know where to find
Jason,
me.
Jason, dig deep.
I'll start looking.
Good luck with that one.
All kidding aside, it is an unfortunate part of politics, but it is a thing. But and for all of the women and men that want to run, but it's just something you have to do, because if you want to change the world, that's the gateway that you have to go through.
Well, even local races for state rep, it's 150. I mean, I don't even know what it is today, but I know it has been. And it's not going to be less.
No, and it just depends on who jumps in the race. Because, I think, you could definitely run for state rep for 100 or lower. But if you get in a race with somebody that wants to spend 200 or 300.
On
then,
TV,
Right.
Right.
That's how that works.
One more question. And what surprised you or was eye-opening about politics that you didn't know before you got into it?
Yeah, that's a great question, because what has really surprised me and saddened me is how little we deal in concrete realities and actually just really logical analysis. Like when you run a business or when somebody hires you as a CPA to come into their business to help them do a better, to make more money or whatever, you get in there and you're usually giving that business owner a lot of bad news. Mm-hmm. But in politics, it just seems like it's our job to run a government. But because of the political nature of things right now, instead of telling people the hard news and what we have to do, we're like actively, I watch that everybody just tells their constituents what their constituents want to hear. And it's pretty scary. This whole post-truth era thing is really scary, because if we don't handle our problems head on, and that means our actual problems, and with some pragmatism and some practical solutions, and try to compare ourselves to other states and just come up with really good ways to do things, if we don't do that, and we never actually solve the real problems we have, I don't know how you ever rise above 49th and 50th, mm-hmm. because we have real issues here in the state that we've got to take on head on. We don't have time for rhetoric.
Well, it's like your cancer diagnosis. I'm sure you didn't want to hear what they told you, but you needed to hear it, face it, and do what they told you to do.
Yeah, it was horrible.
Yeah.
It was horrible,
but
it worked.
Yeah.
And you find peace and purpose in your destiny, and I knew that no matter what, it was something that I was going to have to go through, mm-hmm. And yeah. that I was going to just try to let it build wisdom in me and strength and courage.
Yeah.
And now, as this new door opened, when I just prayed and prayed, God, let a door open, because it doesn't make sense that everything stopped in the middle of that treasurer's race. But this door opened, and I wonder what God's got around the corner for mm-hmm. it, because I do feel called to it, and I'm excited to find out the plan.
Excellent. Well, thank you for being here today. Yeah. This is fascinating.
Thank you so much. It was really a pleasure. I really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure for me, too. And I just want to say, I feel you're a kindred spirit. We both want our state to be the best it can be and own itself. We're a sportsman's paradise with wonderful people, and we should be celebrating that every day. So
we have too many assets. Mm-hmm. We have too many resources. We're just abundant in culture and music and mm-hmm. the river and the port. And I mean, we're the gateway to the Americas. I mean, we've got too much going on.
Let's own it.
Yes.
Let's do it. So, well, thank you, Julie Stokes, for being here today. Again, my friend Julie Stokes, she's currently a Republican state legislator from Kenner and a candidate for Louisiana Secretary of State. And to our listeners, thank you so much for listening today. I'm Jan Swift, and this is another edition of Discover Lafayette.